Hello and welcome to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. I'm Owen Wainhouse.
I'm Francesco Stassi and I'm one of the principals at ASA Studio.
I'm Alice Tasca, I'm one of the principals at ASA Studio.
This week's programme was recorded in Rwanda as part of a series of episodes we're bringing you from East Africa to explore issues around identity and architecture. Identity is the theme of this year's London Festival of Architecture.
For sure, we enjoy the fact to be a very small firm, and this makes us, gives us the possibility to still be architects, you know. So we actually design and we are 100% involved in all the phases of the design and site management and project management and the relation with the client. So we really like that part.
On the programme this week, we speak to Francesco Stassi and Alice Tasca, principals of Active Social Architecture in Kigali. Active Social Architecture, or ASA Studio, was founded in 2012 by Neria Amora Salaudry and Thomas Valander, following extensive work on projects for Plan International and UNICEF. But when the two moved on, the firm was taken on by Francesco and Alice, along with Zeno Riondato. Together, they now lead the firm's work on a range of projects, from healthcare to schools and education facilities. Alongside the practice, Alice continues to teach in the Department of Architecture at the Kigali Institute of Science and Technology, now part of the University of Rwanda. The University of Rwanda is still the only architecture school in the country. In the warm breeze in the garden of their studio, amongst some rather loud birds in the trees, I started by asking Francesco about the history of the practice.
So you've been here, what, 2013, did you say?
Yes, I graduated from university in Torino in 2008.
Okay.
I worked in Italy for a few years, yeah, and mainly focusing on interior design and refurbishment works. And they moved here in 2013, specifically to work for ASA, so okay, for this company. And 1 year later, I purchased the company and became a partner with the other two guys.
Okay. And what drove, I mean, it's a big step to move from Italy to
it
Rwanda.
It is a big step. Actually, mainly I was... I can say that I was bored of what I was doing okay in Italy. So I couldn't see the purpose of the work that I was doing. I was doing interior design, I was doing stands, architecture for exhibition.
Yeah.
So something that you design and after you build it up and after 3 days you have to dismantle it. And I always wanted to work in a different environment and do something that had a meaning for the society. And when I received a call from the previous owner of the company, of ASA, and who asked me to come here, to move here for a period, I decided to move. And after this period of work, I decided to stay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your route here, how was that? So you studied in Turin as well?
So I won a scholarship to come here, but it was really unexpected. I was at doing my master thesis. I actually had a completely different idea, but the professor I wanted to do the thesis with was not available.
Okay.
I applied for this scholarship. I won it, and I just came to Rwanda with a research scholarship.
Okay. And who was that with? I mean, who provides scholarships?
It was the Buzziol Foundation of Venice. And
and the scholarship was to practice architecture?
No, it was to research for the sustainable architecture master that I was attending. And I came actually with other instead product designers that were doing their research on products.
Okay.
And I fell in love with Rwanda, and I had in my mind to come back. It wasn't really at the beginning to pursue this social-oriented architecture. Okay. It was my actual attraction, let's say, or my the values that drove me here were to kind of develop a different architecture that is much more environmentally engaged, which in Italy is not, or in Europe in general, overdeveloped countries do not have space for that anymore. Instead, here you are still kind of at the origin of a local architecture or that identity we were speaking about. And I think that architecture, to be really sustainable, it should not only be socially engaged, but also environmentally engaged. And here, working with low-tech, local construction techniques and locally available materials, that's what I wanted to experience and study and research and practice.
And then maybe just be interested in the kind of foundings of active social architecture, so the practice that you now run. But where, you say you've kind of brought the practice out when the founders left. Just interested in a bit of the kind of history of the company. Yeah,
so ASA has been founded in 2012 by two architects, one Italian architect and one Spanish architect.
Okay.
They met here for different reasons. One came to teach at the university. The other one came to do a master.
An internship
at Plan International or UNICEF. UNICEF. Okay. So they met here and they. So at that time, UNICEF started to work on the early childhood development program to provide early childhood education in the country. And so they actually needed an architect consultant to do a design and to work on that. And that was the reason why the two founders actually founded the company. And yeah, that's what happened. It started everything with UNICEF and Plan International with education facilities. That is one of the main, focus of this company. And they then, for their personal reasons, after a couple of years, they left. They moved to South Africa, one moved to London.
Okay.
And we, at the moment, we were working for the company and we purchased the company in 2014.
Okay.
And we took over. Yeah.
And there's now, how many of you in the practice? There's three kind of
At the moment.
Owners or principals.
Yeah.
And then.
So three principals.
Okay.
And one architect, local architect, graduated in 2016.
Fifteen.
Okay. Started in 2016 from a University of Rwanda.
Okay.
And at the moment, it's the four of us plus interns. Okay. Interns come like every 4-5 months.
Okay.
Usually from all over the world. At the moment, we have an intern from South Africa and an intern from UK.
Okay. And that's a part of the kind of internship program then for people that you run as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and then I was kind of interested. I mean, lots of, certainly in London, lots of smaller practices combine their work in practice with teaching, and you're teaching now at the University of Rwanda. Indeed, Theo, who we spoke to yesterday, was one of your early students.
Yes. Indeed, it was. I came first in 2011 to teach. So it wasn't in my program or my vision to stay here so long and actually purchase a firm, an architecture firm. Everything came by opportunity with the time. Yeah. And so, yes, I've been involved with the teaching since 2011. Now I'm at my 10th or something semester.
Okay.
And it's actually interesting to see how the first 19 students that ever graduated in Rwanda in architecture in 2013, that were also students of mine, are now practicing, working in different firms, or many of them actually more working for the municipality. For the technical office.
Okay.
And
that's 2013 was the first set of
students ever graduated in this country in architecture. Yes.
I mean, that's incredible.
It's really incredible, and everything had to grow around that, because for the first time, again, the local municipality had an actual local architects working in the technical office, and then the necessity to found the Rwanda Institute of Architects and, you know, establish it according to a system of regulations that before were not here yet.
Didn't exist, yeah.
And yes, so even like the building codes, everything is born very recently in Rwanda, as well as the practice, let's say. Buildings before were normally designed and built from either local architects that graduated abroad or expatriate architects coming from East Africa mostly, or Europe, let's say. So nowadays we are in contact with my previous students, and they are now my colleagues.
Yeah.
And I have to say that some of them are really skilled, and they do really a good job in the firms where they work. And it's nice to see. I'm proud to see how they are doing, given it's the first generation.
I mean, that's, as I say, it must be very hard for people coming through university to kind of know what the profession is and what the profession does when there isn't that kind of
they
history.
They don't have benchmarks yet. They didn't, at least now, let's say, new architects that will graduate this year, last year, they at least have a couple of years to look at.
Yeah.
But indeed, the spectrum of professions, that is not just, you know, designing a building.
Mm.
It's much more even engaging with interior design, construction management. So the many different aspects of architecture, this profession. So they can invent their future, and that's very promising.
Yeah. And then the bulk of your work is, as we were saying earlier, kind of education, healthcare. Is that what you think people aspire to? I mean, I suppose that's a large part of the architectural work in Rwanda, is it? Or is that a small part? I mean, what's the...
Not really. It's not really so, you know, diffuse, as you can imagine. Actually, the design of schools and education facilities, it's not many offices are involved in that. Maybe we are the only one.
Okay.
Mainly the architecture here focuses on, you know, buildings in town, apartment buildings, because those are, you know, the population is growing, so that there is a lot of requirements. So housing and apartments is probably the most diffused.
Okay.
Commercial and retail as well.
Okay.
But mainly in the city. What we mainly work we work in education and health facilities and mainly outside of Kigali.
Okay.
So mainly in rural areas. So we started with the UNICEF projects, with the Early Childhood Development Center and pre-primary schools.
Yeah.
And we designed a prototype, and we implemented it in more than 20 locations. And we have been working with other NGOs for health facilities.
Okay.
At the moment, we are building a health center in Ruggerero, so in the Ruggerero sector, towards the lake, okay. Lake Kivu. There's a lot of need of health facilities in the country, so yeah. The government is actually pushing to provide and implement health facilities, health posts and health centers. But in terms of architecture and designing them, that is not really diffused.
Okay. And so when you're, construction and architecture are kind of hand in hand and you work together, you're the kind of construction of projects outside of Kigali, is it locals? Are you training locals up for construction? I mean, how are the projects built and how are they?
That's a big part of actually our work. So there is a contractor. There is a local contractor who is actually has some skills and start to build. Yeah. But generally they have few skilled persons like the chief of the maisons and the welder, etc. And then they hire people. They go on site and they hire people from the local community.
Okay.
Which is actually really important because it local community learn a job, yeah. And they learn how to build, they learn different techniques, and they can also use that skill in future to work for other companies or to get more job opportunities. So our work is that part of the work, at least for us, is quite challenging, we have to say, because you have to supervise the works quite closely and make sure that everything goes as you planned.
So you're spending a lot of time on site for projects that you're working
on. It's never enough. But yes, so okay. At the moment, Christian, that I mentioned before, so is on site 24/7 to supervise the works of the health center.
Okay.
Then, according to the client, the condition, we supervise the work more or less.
Yeah.
But that's have to say that is one of the most important part of the entire process, from the design up to the handover.
Yeah.
Usually, when you are on site, you have to explain actually to how to mix cement, how to mix cement with water, with sand, and aggregate, and or how do you want the bond of the bricks of the wall? So yeah. And explain why and how do you make the joint between the bricks? So those things are not part of the. Some masons know about that, yeah. But very few. And usually on site, you have to teach that as well, which is also one of the interesting parts of this job, yeah. I have to say.
I mean, that's not something an architect in London would be having to do as part of their day-to-day role. I'd like to see them try explaining that to a contractor. But
sometimes you even have to learn to teach them how to proper use a tape meter or to use a level.
Okay.
So. Of the tools, they even never seen them. So you cannot really expect them to know how to use these tools.
Yeah.
But somehow they always manage to do something that you ask for. It's more the quality of the finishing that we have to work a lot on.
And how does language, a lot of teaching changed here from French as the kind of working business language to English, I guess. And
so in Kigali, that would not be a problem because most of people speak actually four languages. They speak Kishwaili, they speak Nyarwanda, then French and English.
Yeah.
Instead, in the countryside, most of the time, if it's an older person or technician, he would speak mostly French.
Okay.
And Kinyarwanda, of course. Instead, if it's a more young technician, it doesn't have enough preparation or knowledge of English, so they speak mostly Kinyarwanda.
Okay.
That's why we always work with, for instance, Christian or locals that speak also English.
Okay.
And we normally train, we go once a week to monitor and supervise the construction, and we leave a report and a list of things that have to be implemented. And so either our employee that speaks Kinyarwanda is on site, or the chief of masons, chief of welders or carpenters, they implement through, you know, a hierarchical system.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but definitely language is a challenge, and personally,
it's also our fault.
Our big fault. It's our big luck.
And is that? I mean, I was talking yesterday about kind of health and safety on site, and the need to kind of train contractors up and thinking about kind of safety and about looking at water. The idea of having clean water on site as part of your health and safety kind of regime. I guess kind of language then is partly coming into training, is it? I mean, for kind of access to language through construction.
No, I think that's the main part
of
communication, but not only in terms of spoken language, but also if you think about the drawings, which is our language at the end. Yeah. And for them, sometimes it's very difficult to understand even the difference between a plan and a section. So maybe with 3D visualizations, for them it's easier, but then you risk that they do not look at the details.
Yeah.
And so also teaching them how to read the drawings is very much part of our work, our job. And at the beginning, the first phases of the construction, that's the most sensitive part and the longest, actually. Okay. Most of the time, because they have to learn how to read the drawings first and then how to implement them. And you are there most of the time on site to see how they are doing, what questions they have, how to answer.
That's really interesting, kind of almost teaching the language of drawing and kind of understanding section plans and section and scale and things as a language.
Yeah, on our side, we also have to adapt. You know, to do a site layout, you have the GPS and the theodolite, and you fix the points quite easily on the ground. But sometimes these are not tools that are available here, so you have to go back to the geometry and put dimensions on the drawings that to make all the triangles and give two dimensions per each point.
Yeah.
So that they can, with the tape measurement, they can actually fix all the points on the ground. So it's not just, teaching and trying to explain our way of the drawings or our way of doing the job. It's also from our side to trying to find the compromise and trying to explain it in the proper way.
Yeah. Fantastic. Just a couple of last very quick questions then. I'm interested in other practices you think are doing interesting, a couple of questions really, other practices maybe that you think are doing interesting work, either in Rwanda or kind of across Africa. And also, I guess, kind of interested in buildings you think people should see in Rwanda. Are there any kind of interesting buildings or things that are perhaps...
Okay, so here in Rwanda, we can suggest to visit some of the projects done by Mass Design. Especially Butaro Hospital in the north. Now I think they changed the scale of their projects, but until a few years ago, we were very much involved in similar scale of projects.
Yeah.
And so we share similar values in terms of how to involve, how to use local technologies and involve more the local labor. Another interesting office in East Africa is Orchid Studio, based in Nairobi now, which works much in a much more extended area, let's say. I know
we've got a podcast with them recorded from a couple of weeks ago.
They just completed an hospital in Zambia, and they are implementing or designing the doctor housing in this for the same hospital. And actually, an employee that was working at ASA for a couple of years moved with Orchi Studio in Nairobi now. We met over the weekend just to catch up.
So it's a nice alumni from your practice going off to
spread but their I think that should be the way these small practices, at least I speak for us, should work. It should be more platforms of sharing experiences and improve with the little means available here what the results that we can achieve. So any kind of influence, any kind of stimulations from different point of views, it's always welcomed. And I think that sharing part, it's important for our job, especially in a country where you don't have, you know, museums or exhibitions or many contemporary constructions going on, let's say, that you can take as reference.
Fantastic.
So yes, sharing with the practices that we have similar values with, I think it's important.
And so then, where people are listening, where else can they find out more about ASA Studio? Where's the best place for them to find out about your work and what you're doing and what's next?
The best place to find out about us.
Yeah, this is the opportunity where you plug your practice and tell us how we can find out more.
Well, for sure our website.
Okay, which is
www.activesocialarchitecture.com.
Okay. All as one word, activesocialarchitecture.com.
Activesocialarchitecture.com.
Okay.
Then we
have an Instagram page that we keep updated with the latest features from the sites.
Yeah. We'll link to
and the Facebook
to all of that
page as well.
And where next for the practice then? Is there a plan, 10-year plan, 5-year plan? Are you just enjoying the work that you're doing? Are you thinking about the future of the practice?
The development of our career, let's say, and the firms always depends from the context where we work in and the opportunities we get. For sure, we enjoy the fact to be a very small firm, and this gives us the possibility to still be architects, you know? So we actually design and we are 100% involved in all the phases of the design and site management and project management and the relation with the client. So we really like that part of being a small firm. So the idea is to keep going like that and try to focus more and more on social and environmentally sensitive projects.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you both so much for your time.
Thanks.
That's a real fantastic insight.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. On the programme this week was Francesco Stassi and Alice Tasca. You can find out more about Francesco and Alice at architecturemasters.org. From where you can also subscribe to the programme and follow us on Twitter. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, why not leave a review or a rating with your podcast provider, as this helps others to discover the programme. Music for this week's episode was from Peter Lagono and Raw Music International, Kisumu Mixtape, available via the Free Music Archive and released under a Creative Commons licence. In Kigali, I'm Owen Wainhouse. Thank you for listening.